98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Going back home, playing in Dallas, obviously a big game for us on Monday night in front of everybody.
I mean, this is what he's worked hard for his entire life, to have moments like this.
Baby! Certainly, it'll be worthy of the national stage.
Bickley and Marotta talk Cardinals, Cowboys, Monday Night Football, now.
We believe that these guys are still going to run their offense. You know, the only difference is that Andy is not as mobile as Dak is. Andy can, you know, he's elusive, can get away from pressure. But, you know, Dak is a little bit more mobile than Andy is, so... We are expecting the normal passing offense, but we also have to expect, you know, them to not really put the load on Andy, you know, so we have to expect those guys come out, try to control the ball game by running the football, get Ezekiel in the ball game early, control the line of scrimmage, because they got a lot of guys on the offensive line banged up as well. So for the most part, we're definitely expecting those guys to do what they do, but probably a little bit more run, but we have to wait and see Monday night to see what those guys give us.
Patrick Peterson of the Arizona Cardinals talking about preparing for an Andy Dalton run offense. We heard Vance Joseph say yesterday, yeah, when Dalton came in, nothing changed. You wouldn't expect there to be massive change during the course of a game, even with a devastating injury. And Dalton played well. Cowboys were able to win that game, and he made a couple big passes on that last field goal drive. If you're going to see change at all, it should come this week. There's still, no matter how you slice it, with Andy Dalton at the controls,
yeah,
there's still a lot to be concerned about if you're a defensive player or coach on the Arizona Cardinals side, because there's a lot of weapons. Last week, Steve Keim came out and said it, Bick. Our stars are not playing like stars.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to happen. Patrick Peterson, I don't think he stood out as a poor performer against the Jets, but you're chasing Jeff Smith around the field, and Jeff Smith couldn't catch a cold.
No. Listen, he drew a fortuitous matchup last week. There were not a lot of weapons testing him. There's going to be weapons on the edge.
This might be the best group of three wide receivers as a group in the league.
That's a great point. I don't know how to argue with that. I really don't. So Patrick Peterson is going to be you would think he's going to be tested. Now, the question becomes, what does Andy Dalton really do with this? It's one thing to come into a game the way he did. It's another thing altogether to take the reins at the beginning of the week and know it's all you. I was fooled by Joe Flacco. Andy Dalton is saying all the right things. He acts like he's up for this moment. I'm going to have to believe it. I'm going to have to see it to believe it. But mm-hmm. I do think it's going to be a test for the Cardinals defense, and especially without Chandler Jones. Now, I'm reassured that Jordan Phillips is going to make this game. I think it would have been really hard for this team to absorb the loss of two guys from the front seven.
Yes. That is key, because when that became a possibility and Jordan Phillips, his tweet came out and got some attention, you're like, uh-oh. It has been worked out by the Cardinals. Steve Keim, the general manager with Doug and Wolf, actually talked about that today, Jordan Phillips being able to attend a family funeral and play in the game.
Yeah, it's a great relief, and it's honestly a tribute to our owner, Michael Bidwell, who, behind the scenes and doesn't want any credit, does so many things in the community and for our players and our families that mean so much. So hats off to the organization, and most importantly, hats off to Michael and really how he treats people and how he runs this organization.
And Jordan Phillips is a guy. Now, you know, one of the things that was exciting about him, and I think he's been good so far.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen the pass rush numbers that he put up in Buffalo last year. We're in the middle of that defensive line. He put up 8.5 sacks. He's one of those players, Bick, that it's incumbent upon him to start creating more pressure from his role. Chandler Jones is out. Everybody else has to elevate.
I'm sure in the case of this, it was probably one of those deals where, you know, the only way we can make this happen is if Michael flies him there.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably went to Michael and said, Michael, I don't know if you got any plans, but this football game on Monday is really big, and Jordan Phillips would be a really big piece. You think you can get involved? And he probably said yes. And he's really good like that. He's the one that hung back and took Anquan Boldin back after Anquan shattered his face in New York.
It did take a Jordan Phillips tweet, though, maybe to get this in motion.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe. Look, I mean,
but either way, if you're the Cardinals, that's probably worth the jet fuel that you have to buy.
Let's just say it's a big advantage to have your own plane. Like, the closest it comes to me in my life is having a friend who's got a pickup truck when you're moving.
I know.
That's about as far as I can stretch that thinking.
Yeah.
But when, you know, the guy who signs your paychecks has access to a plane, you know, good things can happen.
Yeah, that's next level stuff. You know, private planes open up a world of options for people.
Yeah. So obviously the two things work hand in hand. Getting pressure on quarterbacks makes things a lot easier on cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick Peterson, whether he's on CeeDee Lamb or Amari Cooper or Michael Gallup or whoever, if that pressure up front increases, going to make things easier on the back end. We'll get back to Peterson, but here's another guy, Vance Joseph, yesterday talking about another guy he thinks can win his one-on-one battles, and that's Hassan Reddick.
I just want him on the field.
That was the wrong one.
He's a guy, if he's one-on-one on third downs, he can win a one-on-one in the pass rush, you know, and with Chandler being out, it's going to take, you know, all of us to, you know, pick up the slack where Chandler would take on as a pass rusher.
And I hit the wrong one, but I'm going to play that one next. Steve Keim mentioning another guy that Doug and Wolf asked him about this morning, and that is this question. We're going into 6 weeks of this question with Isaiah Simmons. When is he going to make a more sizable contribution to the defense? Here with Steve Keim.
I just want him on the field. That being said, I know there are things that can stunt a player's growth, and when you want a guy to play inside linebacker and he's your future, you know, getting a player to get experience with his eyes and his instincts and his reads and reactions, it's one thing. But, you know, whenever you're talking about moving a player to the outside, asking him to do different things, now that's for the team. And that's fine if he can handle that. But he's got to be significantly better than what you already have playing out there. So there's a number of things that go into the decisions. Obviously, we have all those talks behind the scenes with Vance and Cliff. But we're certainly trying to put the best 11 out there that we can.
A lot to chew on there. The sexy part of it is the first thing that Steve Keim said. I just want him on the field.
Yeah, that
but
sounded...
But then it was about 45 seconds of all the reasons that go into the butt that followed that.
Yeah, right, exactly. But at the same time, those words did come out of his mouth, and you could tell that he is getting a little impatient. And it's you would hope that the guy that showed such great versatility at all those positions at Clemson wouldn't struggle to show out better than some of the guys the Cardinals have, at least in a rotational basis. I don't know. Yeah, I'm hoping this is going to be the week, Vinny.
I'm hoping too. I'm not going to be surprised if we see a snap count of around 9 to 13 again for Isaiah Simmons. Because of all the reasons that Steve Keim, you know, stated in that butt. And part of it was, okay, you want him out there, but is he significantly better than what's already out there?
What?
Well, no. If you're going to play him at inside linebacker, no. His strength, one of the attractive features of Isaiah Simmons was his versatility, which has been trumpeted by the Cardinals. He's not shown much there.
Can't you dial up one play where he's blitzing free off the edge? Maybe give him something to celebrate and to expedite his growth.
I think that's a great point. The only plays that you remember from Isaiah Simmons this year all came in that first game against San Francisco, and they were all negative. Getting caught with his eyes in the backfield on the swing route to Mostert, the horse collar tackle on George Kittle, and then also kind of losing his assignment and a miscommunication on
another
the other touchdown pass to a running back.
Yeah, but
he's had nothing to celebrate individually.
Nothing,
really.
And that is on the defensive coordinator. Get something going for him. That's pretty elementary to me. But that's why these next couple games are so fascinating to me, because defensively, there's going to have to be some accountability here, and there's going to have to be some innovation and maybe some ingenuity. Now, it's not like the Cowboys are a real healthy team on offense. They've got plenty of losses of their own that they're dealing with here. They've just got a lot of skilled players, and they had an offense that was scoring a lot of points, regardless of how bad its defense was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's this is and this is not this. I think the fear is this is not the week you want to look bad. This is not the week you want to get embarrassed. It's Monday Night Football. And so it's there's a lot of that going into this as well. So when you're looking at Isaiah Simmons, to me, it's there's a lot of risk because we saw against the 49ers how quickly a smart offensive coordinator targeted that matchup and tested him, and it didn't work out well.
It just helps, too, that Raheem Mostert is apparently the fastest player on the
planet.
Yeah,
it's true.
Going full circle now, back to Patrick Peterson and the chore that himself and the other members of that secondary have going up against this receiving core of the Dallas Cowboys.
They have a very unique group. You know, you have Amari, you know, that's been doing nothing but great things since he got into the league. And I believe he was really the guy to get, you know, that offense open up. You know, got Gallup, you know, taking the top off the defenses on the outside. And you got the rookie who's coming in and has been a sensation so far. You know, so we're going to have our hands full. You know, they're not the number one passing offense for no reason. You know, those guys have a ton of weapons, and they do a great job by distributing the ball out to their playmakers. So we're going to have our hands full. I believe we have a great game plan in store, but it's up to us to go out there and execute the game plan to the full of our potential.
Now, I think this game has the capability, the potential to be a real shootout game, just scoring back and forth. I think I read today, I got to find the note, the Cardinals through five games, every single one of their games has hit the under.
Wow.
Maybe that'll change this week.
Yeah, that kind of speaks to an underperforming offense.
People
yeah.
think the offense is more explosive than it actually
that
is.
It actually yeah. is. It's true.
We want to remind you that you can subscribe to the Bickley and Marotta podcast. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android and never miss any of the show. It's the Bickley and Marotta podcast. It's brought to you this week by National Bank of Arizona.
38-yard field goal attempt is good by Randy Bullock. And Cincinnati appearing to just be satisfied to knock out the shutout.
Greg Gumbel on CBS, you might be asking yourself, why are they playing a highlight of a field goal by the Cincinnati Bengals in a game they lost by 24 points in the last minute? There's reason for it, because
yes,
yesterday
is.
It came up in a press conference setting with Don Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens. It's 27-0. The Bengals kick the field goal. They avoid the shutout. Apparently, it's only the fifth time since 1970 that a football team has done that to avoid a shutout, kick a meaningless field goal just to take the zero off the board. It doesn't happen often. Wink Martindale was asked about it by Jameson Hensley, a Baltimore Ravens writer, and here's what the coach had to say about it.
Why are you doing that to me, Jameson? You know what it was, all right? He knew what it was because it was awful quiet when I yelled it across the field. So there's some people that take that as a victory. We'll see. We got plenty to talk about next time we play him.
Wow. Yeah, so apparently Martindale, when that went down and they trot their kicker on the field, he's yelling across the field. I don't know what he was yelling. I imagine it wasn't very nice, but he's yelling at Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
I was able to find, during that last possession by Cincinnati, some commentary from the Baltimore radio booth.
Really?
This is mostly Obafemi Ayomadejo doing the color commentary.
Former Cardinal.
But it was brought up, okay, you know, what are the Bengals doing here? Are they going to tinker with the idea of kicking a field goal? Listen to this.
What's going to be real interesting here is if they decide they just don't want to get shut out.
They kick a
and
field goal?
Kick a field goal. I personally do the honorable thing. Either get a touchdown or don't score.
Man up.
Let's make that agreement right now. Handshake agreement right now. It's either seven or nothing.
He's short by an inch. He's short by an inch. So it'll be fourth and one. I think that's one of those unwritten codes, right?
It is definitely.
Like, you can't just take the field goal because you've been beaten all day. If you get the touchdown, you've earned the right not to be shut out.
You can't bunt on a no-hitter in the ninth. I don't believe in that. And that's basically what kicking a field goal would be. It'd be bunting on a no-hitter in the ninth.
Good job finding that audio. That's fascinating. When I first heard the story, I did not know the Bengals ran three times prior to trotting their field goal kicker out there.
I know that
it changes the
story.
You
brought this up yesterday, and you said when the Martindale quote got splashed all across social media, you're like, what are they supposed to do? Stop trying? Well, they kind of did.
Yeah, I did. It changes the story, Vinny, and I admit that. I thought, what's the big deal that a team didn't go for the end zone on fourth down? But if they weren't even throwing the ball on the previous plays, or at least on, and not even going for it on a fourth and short situation, yeah, that's kind of bush.
Before they kicked the field goal, they ran the ball on seven consecutive plays. So you heard the snippet there. Joe Mixon runs on third down. He stopped for no gain by Patrick Queen. Fourth and one, they run again. He gets 5 yards, first down. Then they ran again. Mixon for two-minute warning. Mixon for two. Then they lose 1 yard, and they're back at the 20-yard line. Then they trotted on. They weren't trying to score a touchdown there. And if they had taken a shot or two into the end zone and
just
came up empty,
yeah.
It totally puts a Band-Aid on the fact that they brought out their field goal kicker.
Yeah.
I agree with Martindale here. I can't believe we're talking about unwritten rules now in football.
No, that's why the story was so fascinating to me yesterday when I first heard it. I thought, oh, well, come on. This defensive coordinator wants the shutout that badly because keep in mind, that's for his defense, that's for him, it makes him look good, and I thought that's really a selfish, silly way to look at what the Bengals did, but the fact that they were just basically setting up that field goal attempt, that they weren't going to risk it by throwing passes, yeah, that is kind of bush. I agree.
In fact, on the last possession, which started with 8:21 to go, Cincinnati's trailing by 27 points. They had a 14-play, 55-yard drive, and if I'm looking at this correctly, only two of them were throws.
So they were running the ball successfully is what you're saying, though?
Yes.
Okay.
The early part of the drive.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of bush. I kind of agree with Femi and what he said about that. Now, bunting to ruin a no-hitter in the ninth inning? Yeah, okay. If it's a close game, not so much. No, I mean, look.
What we need is more unwritten rules.
Yeah, really.
Rules of basketball.
Right. Yeah. Let's find Ben Davis. Let's talk to Ben Davis. You got a number from Jarrett?
Ben Davis?
Ben Davis, the baseball player, not the former U of A basketball player.
Okay. No.
You know who I'm talking about?
I don't know.
That's the guy
against Curt Schilling?
Yes. He's the one that laid down the bunt against Curt Schilling, and Curt lost his mind.
And I remember doing radio shows at that time, and I was just firmly on Schilling's side on that.
Yeah.
And other people disagree.
Yeah, listen, I don't... I think it's a little too much conceding to another guy's accomplishment if you're not allowed to bunt in a close game. If it's 6-0, 5-0, I don't know where the line is, but in a 2-0 game, you should be allowed to bunt.
It's just, why should you not be allowed? Why should you ever not be allowed
to do anything?
To do anything. As long as it's legal, it's within the actual rules of any sport.
We had a situation the other night when the Dodgers scored 11 runs in the first inning. It was basically a game not to violate. It turned into 8 innings of not violating unwritten rules. The Dodgers had runners on base.
That's right.
But they kind of took their foot off the gas pedal.
Right.
I remember thinking,
is that the right approach? And how did it affect them in last night's game?
The opponent getting blown out is not expected to take liberties either. By, like, stealing bases. If the other team is foot off the gas pedal, that means you guys shouldn't take liberties on the base paths. It's asinine.
I think in that instance, if you're the team that's getting your brains beat in, you're doing anything to try to get back. It's a playoff game. You're trying to do anything you can to get back in the game. Didn't work out for the Braves, 15-3.
The kicking the field goal when you're down by a lot of points, who is that insulting to, though?
It's stupid. They got shut out for 59 minutes and 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. But it's not.
And didn't try to score a touchdown. They just tried to. I mean, a shutout is a badge of honor for a defense.
It is. And the way the Bengals went about it, I think it checked all the boxes that made it kind of bush.
Now, the Bengals could probably counter and say, yeah, we didn't take any shots into the end zone because our offensive line is going to get our young quarterback killed. He's been sacked so many times.
Right.
There's people already throwing up the David Carr comparison.
Wow.
When David Carr came into the league for an expansion team in Houston, they put him out there from day one, and he got the stuffing beat out of him because their line couldn't block anybody. Burrow's getting just killed on
a weekly
basis.
The Bengals, can't you just be like, okay, we didn't want to get shut out. But we wanted to have one positive thing to take away from this terrible game. It'd be like you were talking about the 11-0 in the first inning. It'd be like if that got up to like 15-0, and then a team, would that be the equivalent of them like manufacturing one run in the ninth inning?
I'm sympathetic to what you're saying, Jared. I really am. But I also think that if you play the game and you're on the field, you would expect the Bengals to fight a little harder for something a little more meaningful, such as, okay, if you needed to protect Joe Burrow, which is why they ran the ball that much down the stretch, then go for it on fourth down. Because it's fourth and one. That's the manly thing to do. And I could see,
yeah, that's true. If you run the ball on fourth down just to try.
Yeah, I could see player to player. And then maybe if you ran it again and kept running it and you had fourth and six, and you knew no way we're making it, then you kicked the field goal.
But here's another thing that the Bengals didn't do. Joe Burrow was in that game.
I know.
Down 27.
What is he doing in the game?
Well, what is he doing in the game?
That's why the argument about why didn't they throw, because they didn't want to get him hurt. That's why it doesn't really work, because then why was he in the game at all if you are worried about him getting hurt?
And if you're the Cincinnati Bengals and you've been dominated to that level, are you feeling any better that the number on the board is 3 as opposed to 0?
No, just the only one who is the offensive coordinator and the head coach. That's it. And that's why he was screaming at Zach Taylor, because they knew it was chicken bleep.
The unfortunate thing is these two teams don't meet again until the last game of the regular season, which the Bengals will be playing for nothing. And maybe the Ravens, they might be resting everybody at that point to get ready for the playoffs.
That's true.
It won't be a true test of vitriol maybe until next year.
Good point.
Yeah. Do you know a high school student who has shown outstanding character? Nominate them now and they could receive a $10,000 scholarship courtesy of Parker & Sons. Just text CHARACTER to 620-620 to nominate a student for Character Counts 2020. Coming up next, with no Thursday night game last night, we pushed it back a day. Start, sit, cut. Fantasy football edition is straight ahead. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
You knew it was coming.
Yep.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com. Who is more important to the Cardinals' defense? Chandler Jones, Patrick Peterson. I would have had a completely different answer than the one I would give today, last week.
Yeah.
Right now, Patrick Peterson is way more important to the
Jones
Cardinals.
Chandler Jones isn't playing.
Yeah. Is that the way you see it, too?
Yeah.
Chandler Jones still has 80% of the vote. 20% for Patrick Peterson. I hate to tell you, Cardinal fans, Chandler Jones not walking through that door. Yeah,
that's like that question I asked yesterday that everybody hated.
Which one?
Whoops.
Yeah, which one?
That is today's Sanderson Ford poll question. You can vote on it right now. It lives on the homepage at ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Murata want to know, who would you start, sit, or cut? The Fantasy Football Edition.
All right, a day later, but I'm going to ask you...
And a dollar shorter.
A dollar shorter. Dollars. I was looking up that dollars for donuts. What was that?
Yeah.
Dollars to donuts?
That dollars to donuts.
That was a big phrase my dad would use.
And apparently they think it came from an old phrase, dollars to buttons. And it's to mean something that at the time is so worthless.
Yeah, it means that you are so confident in your bet that you're willing to put up more than...
actual money to something that's not worth anything.
Right, exactly.
And they also surmise that maybe because donuts look like a big zero, that it's a dollar to zero.
Ah, there you go.
All right, I'm going to give you three options, and you have to tell me which one you would start, sit, and cut fantasy-wise. Sometimes I'll give some caveats, but mostly straightforward here. And we'll start with this Cardinals-Dallas Cowboys game on Monday. A lot of talk about the Cowboys' big receivers. A lot of talk about who will Patrick Peterson guard that game. So start, sit, cut. Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. Just real quick, who do you think that Patrick Peterson will guard?
I honestly don't know. They're all three, like, I think it's going to be more Lamb and Gallup, I guess, but...
I will, since I'm supposed to start here, I will, yeah, that's a tough one to do. I guess I'll start Amari Cooper. I will sit Gallup, and I will cut CeeDee Lamb. I don't know. They're all
good. Statistically,
yeah, they're all good.
Actually, CeeDee Lamb actually is has the best fantasy statistics so far. Amari Cooper, obviously the high-paid veteran.
He gets more targets, so I'm gonna start Cooper. I'm gonna sit Lamb, and I'm gonna cut Gallup, and hope that the Cardinals can prevent him from making those big plays down the field like
deep
he does.
Play,
right, and that's the one, like, you can just see them focusing on the other two, and then he's the guy that winds up killing
him. Yardage-wise, that's yep. Where it... Yeah.
All right, staying with that same game, we'll go with actually the top three fantasy scoring guys from that game, and tell me who you would start sit cut between: DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray, and Ezekiel Elliott.
I'll start here. I'm going to go... Oh, that defense has struggled so bad. I'm going to start Hopkins. I'm going to sit Murray, and I'm going to cut Elliott. Even though Elliott's on my actual fantasy team.
And then Cardinals have struggled against stopping some rushers.
Have they? I'm asking you just
Mike Davis, yeah.
Yeah, Mike, yeah.
I mean, he didn't put up huge numbers. He had an impact on the game.
He certainly impacted the I'm going to start Murray. I'm going to sit Elliott. I'm going to cut DeAndre Hopkins.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know if we're going to see a big game from Larry Fitzgerald, or I just think Kyler Murray is going to be the top point producer out of those for the Cardinals, and I think that Ezekiel Elliott will be the second top point producer.
And you don't think DeAndre Hopkins is going to awe himself this week?
No. I think he always awes himself, okay. Did he? I think that happens every week.
All right. Let's go with some of these standout rookie running backs so far this season. And we'll go with start, sit, cut. Clyde Edwards-Helaire versus the Bills. Miles Gaskin versus the Jets. James Robinson versus the Lions.
I think you start this one, too.
Yeah. I'll start Helaire. I will sit Gaskin because the Jets are so bad. I'll cut Robinson.
Robinson, undrafted rookie, has been really, really good.
I'm going to start. Did you say rookie running backs, by the way?
Are they not all rookies?
Gaskin's not.
Oh, first-year starter.
I'm going to start Robinson. I'm going to sit Gaskin, and I'm going to cut Edwards-Helaire because I think the Bills' defense is going to want to have a bounce-back game.
Do you think this is sort of a last hurrah for CEH, as the kids call him, as the featured back? You don't think Bell comes in and...
Well, as the feature back, yeah. He's going to get a lot of carries, but I think they're going to split him more equally than they have with their other running backs.
All right, let's go with... These are players with two first names, okay? Start, sit, cut. Josh Allen versus the Chiefs. Matt Ryan versus the Vikings. Derrick Henry versus the Texans.
My turn to start here?
Yep.
I'm starting Derrick Henry. I'm sitting Josh Allen, and I'm cutting Matt Ryan.
Exactly. Yep. Same. Derrick Henry start, Josh Allen sit, Matt Ryan cut.
All right. Let's go look at some of the top three ranked defenses this year, all with some tasty matchups, and we're assuming all that these games will go on as scheduled. The Indianapolis Colts defense versus Cincinnati, the Patriots defense versus the Broncos, the Ravens defense versus the Eagles.
I will start the Patriots defense versus the Broncos. I will sit the Ravens defense versus the Eagles. I'll cut the Colts defense versus Cincinnati.
Really?
Yep.
I'm going to start the Colts defense against Cincinnati. I'm going to sit the Ravens defense, and I'm cutting the Patriots defense because I don't know if they're going to play.
Ah, well, there you go.
The Colts defense versus Cincinnati, you know, they'll at least give up 3 points, though, no matter what the final score is. All right. Last one here, and not necessarily fantasy here, but the undefeated teams playing this week, most likely to win. Start, sit, cut. The Packers versus Tampa, the Steelers versus the Browns, the Titans versus the Texans.
Most likely to win?
Yeah, most likely to win. Most likely to stay undefeated.
I will take start the Titans. I'm going to sit the Packers, and I'm going to cut the Steelers.
Wow.
Believing in the Browns.
A little bit.
Uh-huh. 1 year late, but they could be the it team this year.
It could be.
Okay, I am going to... That's a tough one. These are very, very difficult. I'm going to go the exact opposite of Vinny. I am going to start the Titans-Texans because I think the Texans are going to win that game.
Do you?
So the opposite.
I know you've always been a big Romeo Crennel fan.
I think they're catching the Titans at the right time.
You're starting who you most think is going to stay undefeated.
Oh, is that what I'm doing?
Yeah. So that would be who you're cutting is the Titans.
Okay, that's who I'm cutting. And the other one's kind of a toss-up to me. Tampa hasn't looked that good, but are they going to lose?
It's in Tampa, that game.
Yeah. I'm going to bet on the Steelers to stay unbeaten. So the Steelers will start.
Yeah. Opposite of Vinny.
Right. Exactly.
Hey, we can't agree on everything.
No.
Right?
Why would you?
There you go. There's start, sit, cut for this week, the Fantasy Football Edition. Text GATE to 620-620 and listen for your name at 5 p.m. for your chance to win a brand new barbecue grill and a custom Arizona Sports cornhole set. You'll also be invited to an exclusive virtual tailgate featuring Arizona Sports hosts and a chance to win a $250 prize pack from Four Peaks Brewing Company. Text GATE to 620-620. The Arizona Sports virtual tailgate is presented by Four Peaks Brewing Company. Coming up next, if you're jonesing to attend an Arizona Cardinals home game, we got some good news for you. And will Nick Saban find his way into the stadium in Tuscaloosa for Saturday? All straight ahead. Spickley and Marotta on this Football Friday, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Spickley and Marotta. Spickley and Marotta.
We just recently had the conversation about when the Cardinals are going to allow some fans, not friends and family.
Uh-huh.
We got an answer.
Yeah, we do.
Week 7 against the Seattle Seahawks, the Arizona Cardinals have been given the clearance from the Arizona Department of Health Services to increase fan attendance to approximately 1,200 in their Week 7 game.
So that was a number
Seattle
that was
Seahawks.
Dictated to them, or that was a number that they chose themselves?
My understanding is that was the ceiling of the clearance
of
that
they
got from the Department of Health Services.
All right. Okay. Sounds reasonable. Like I said, at that point, I don't know why the Cardinals wouldn't just go, we're not doing it, and maybe stand for safety like that. But you can certainly socially distance 1,200 people throughout a football stadium.
The team said in a release, quote, seats from this very limited allotment will be made available exclusively to season ticket members in account seniority order. To accommodate the greatest number of season ticket members, seats will only be sold in quantities of two and assigned in adherence with all local and state COVID-19 guidelines. It's not much, but at least it's a push in a positive direction. I guess.
It's just, I don't know.
Yeah, had they rolled out a plan for 20,000 right off the bat, I think we might be reacting a little bit differently, but
I know I
1,200 in a stadium that seats, what, 65,000?
Yeah, I think you can do that, and you can spread people out fairly convincingly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got no issue with that.
As long as they do spread them out, it's not 1,200 people that all
want to sit at the 50-yard line.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to, again, and I think when they talk about adhering to COVID policies, I think relocating from your assigned ticket space would be one of the conditions.
Yeah, I would think. Once you're there, you're there.
Yeah.
Don't
and I'm sure the diehard Cardinals season ticket holders will love this, to be part of a select audience for a game that big.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And just from a, you know, if I was in that position as a fan, that would be a cool, I mean, nobody wants this to be the normal moving forward. It's the reality right now. That would be a cool experience to say, hey, there was a game the Cardinals played once upon a time that had 1,200 fans there.
Yeah.
And I was one of them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Now, let's hope that a fight doesn't break out. You'd never want something like that happening.
Well, I mean, that's
happened in Cleveland.
That's entirely possible.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
You know what beer does to social distancing
without
guidelines?
A doubt. And to mask protocol and,
tomorrow, we've got a gigantic college football game in Tuscaloosa, second-ranked Alabama hosting third-ranked Georgia. The game is not in question at this point. The attendance of the Alabama head coach, Nick Saban, is in question. He tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday afternoon. He was on his weekly radio show from home on Thursday night. He said, I'm doing great. Don't have any symptoms. I don't have a fever. I would hate not to be at this game Saturday if that's what this turns out to be.
Somebody on Twitter said, rumors circulating around Tuscaloosa that Alabama has hired Rick Saban, brother of Nick, as head coach on a one-game contract.
It's a guy with a mustache who looks a lot like Nick. His twin brother.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah, a guy wearing glasses with a mustache.
Now, this from ESPN. Saban said he would like to be part of the game against Georgia, but that NCAA rules prohibit in-game communication with anyone on the staff while he is in quarantine, and he cannot travel to the stadium while in quarantine either. But if Saban has three negative tests, including the second two in a 24-hour span, he could conceivably be cleared to return to athletic activities before Saturday's game in Tuscaloosa.
Okay.
Yeah, I think
he's going to be on the field.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen
right now.
Yeah.
It's Nick Saban, and there's just some things you know, and this is one thing that you just know. He is not going to miss this football game. It's too important in the context of what they've built and who he is. And Nick Saban is not going to let Steve Sarkisian coach this football game and potentially lose it. That's not going to happen.
No, and
not going to happen.
I know the thinking, too, about among a lot of football fans is you look at this game, 2-3, shortened season.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the history of the SEC is in terms of placing teams in the college football playoff. Is the loser eliminated here?
If the loser is Georgia.
I agree completely. I think if Alabama loses this game, I'm not eliminating from competition. If Georgia loses, I think they're done.
Yeah. No, listen, I completely agree with that. I think there are just two different legacies here. There are two different programs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fair, but it's like that old boxing analogy. Do you know that, Vinny? Styles make fights.
I've heard that somewhere before.
But it's like the boxing analogy. You got to knock the champion out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like Alabama.
Even though they're not the champion.
Right,
but,
exactly.
Outside of that game, it's another rough schedule of games this week. I think that's I'm looking at it right now. I think that's the only game between two ranked teams. The list of games postponed this week has reached 5.
Okay.
Because Florida International and Charlotte have joined that list. There's two other SEC games, LSU at Florida postponed, Vandy at Missouri postponed.
And you said next week we get the joy that is Big Ten football?
I know you love it. I know you can't wait.
It's disgusting.
And then next week we'll be 2 weeks away from Pac-12 football.
I like Pac-12 football. I just wish they were better.
Yeah, I do too. Clemson's on the road at Georgia Tech. Auburn, South Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee. Notre Dame's got Louisville. Ugh. Let's hope that game in Tuscaloosa takes place, because if you want to watch college football tomorrow, it is.
It's slim pickings.
Slim pickings is right.
Definitely.
And this Alabama team, by the way, I said it last year, and I'll continue to believe this. Last year's Alabama team had the best collegiate receiving core ever. When you have Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, two of those guys have moved on. But now with Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith, and this John Michie kid, They haven't missed a beat. They're putting up incredible receiving numbers.
Since when did Alabama's been crazy like this? Because they always, always recruit and produce the best offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. They always produce and recruit the best defensive players and always produce the best NFL-ready running backs.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're adding wide receivers to the mix.
Well, when we had Dennis Dodd on yesterday, he talked about that wave of, you know, Alabama embracing this spread offense when Lane Kiffin got to town as the coordinator.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they? If you have an advantage in recruiting any position and, you know, if you're cream of the crop at any position, you want to go to Alabama, why wouldn't you expand it to wide receiver?
That's a good point. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
And some programs have to pick and choose what they want to be known for. Alabama's just known for everything.
Except quarterbacks. Now, Tua might change that a little bit. But even the kid they have now, do you like this kid they have now?
He's good.
Matt Jones?
I mean, coming off of the Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts era,
mm-hmm.
there's a drop-off athletically, obviously, but he's good. You don't end up at quarterback at Alabama if you're not good.
Right. But for now, Oklahoma's kind of got the reins on quarterback you.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah. But the way you're right, the way all the great wide receivers now are ending up at Alabama, you would have never thought that 25 years ago. Never.
Nope. Coming up next, we're halfway through on this Friday. The Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.